I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to the Blizzard Witch Podcast. I'm Matt, I'm your host. I'm doing this voice, but I'm going to stop now. How are you doing, guys? Sorry about that voice. I'm sure Joe is probably laughing because he usually laughs at my weird stuff.
I'm actually like holding my forehead because I don't know where that voice came from.
Yeah. Actually, it's an Elcor from the Baldur's Gate. Yes, the Baldur's Gate Elcor. It's an Elcor from Mass Effect. Hello.
Goodness.
So anyway, it's me, it's Joe. Say hi, Joe.
Hello! I'm not going to do the joke because I'm lazy.
Okay, that's fine. So how you been doing?
Pretty good. I'm getting really excited. Like I was talking a little bit on the pre-show, I've got a brand new computer that I'm looking forward to playing some WoW on because I'm that nerd that puts together a new computer specifically to play WoW because, well, why not?
Well, quite frankly, I keep getting warnings that my game's going to stop working any second. I'm thinking about trying to figure out a way to do it. So, yeah, I totally get it.
And I will say that WoW looks really good in 4K, which is weird to say because I grew up in the era of, is that a tree or a flat plane? I'm not sure. So, yeah, super excited. How about you?
Nothing like that. We took our pet to the vet the other day, and she needs a different kind of antibiotic because we took her off antibiotics so we could put her on steroids.
Okay.
Because part of the thing that's wrong with her, she's got inflammation that's keeping her from digesting food. So she had to be put on steroids to treat it. So we had her on like really strong antibiotics for a while because one of the consequences of the way she was bred is that she has an extremely short muzzle for a cat.
Mm.
I think she's adorable, but she does have this problem. Short muzzle means she's extremely susceptible to respiratory infections. And in fact, she's had a respiratory infection for years we've not been able to get rid of. The antibiotics were kicking it down. We put her on the antibiotics to strengthen her so that she'd be ready to take the steroids. But as a result of putting her on the steroids, we had taken her off of the antibiotics, which meant that she was getting extremely lethargic because her respiratory infection came roaring back as soon as she came off the antibiotics. So now she's on half dose of steroids, and now we have to give her a half dose of the antibiotics. And that means she has to take two pills at dinner. Pilling a cat's never fun, but we can't even put the pill in anything because she has to eat very specific food to see if it's an allergic thing with her inflammation. So there's nothing we can put the pill in. So we have to just pill her.
That's far less exciting than mine. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, and I love Puka. I think she's a great cat. She's one of my favorites. But she does not deal well with anything she does not understand. Well, there are various kinds of cats. I don't know if you guys have had a lot of cats. There are cats that are avoidant, and there are cats that are confronting cats. When given a situation they don't like, they object and they object with their claws. This is a cat that I know loves me. This is a cat that when I walk into a room, she cries out and tries desperately to get up on me so she can lick my beard. She loves being around me. She's a sweet little cat. The second we tried pilling her, she slashed me across the back of my hand so aggressively that I still have a mark from it. It's going to be a permanent scar. And we have to do this every night. Two pills, not one. Two. So yeah, I'm want to get a new computer, but it's going to be a while. Because money is an issue, and my cat is just being delightful with all her medical stuff. And again, I don't blame her. It's not her fault. It's absolutely just the situation, and it is just the way she is. She's like 13 years old, so I'm not going to be all like it's not, you know, a 13-year-old cat being put in a position like this. Of course, she's going to react. But nevertheless, that's been my life lately.
Well, I am very sorry to hear that. But you know what I'm not sorry about? World of Warcraft. At least not yet.
Yes, you are.
Not yet.
Well, let's talk about that there, World of Warcraft, then. I actually, when I was doing the email for the show, guys, I'm going to give you a little bit seat of backseat baseball here. When I do the email for the show, I usually take the top stories as I view them and put them at the top of the email. And then I go through the various places where we get questions and I put them in the body of the email. I did that second part first this time. And the first part I forgot to do.
Yeah.
So we actually have some stories. I've deliberately tabbed over to the site so we can like look at what we've got going on. One of the things we can talk about is that there's been a pre-patch bug, which they fixed, but it was out. We were talking on the pre-show about bugs and how they can be weird. One of the bugs from the pre-patch was basically if you started a new character, like if you'd boosted a character to 50, or just took a new character that you started after the pre-patch, like you started a new level one and leveled it up to 50, which you can do relatively quickly if you put a little grit into it, you can get it done in a day or two. If you did that and you went and you did the Lordaeron starting experience where you go to Undercity as an Alliance character. I think this is the only one it would work because Horde characters don't talk to this character. But if you do the Lordaeron quest and you then go to talk to Wyrmbane, he doesn't offer you the Tides of War quest.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah. So you couldn't go to Borealis Harbor. So you can't continue the campaign. So you're basically stuck. It's like if you manage to get level 50, you'll still get the quest to visit Magni and Silithus to get the Heart of Azeroth. And you can still use the Borealis Harbor portal from the Wizard Sanctum, but you don't have all the portals to Arathi or Darkshore. They're not accessible. You can't do a lot of stuff. This has been fixed. Blizzard hotfixed it. But it's interesting because it's the exact thing Joe was talking about, which is why I'm going to let Joe talk about it again, so now you guys will get to hear it.
Yeah, so one of the things we were talking about in the pre-show is how some weird interactions happen when you start making changes to anything, any program that's as old as WoW is. We used to hear jokes about random things breaking, but they weren't really jokes. We're talking about like bugs where like eons after Yogg-Saron was relevant, you could still get his debuff and weird things would happen, like getting teleported out of a dungeon when you die because you have the brain room debuff, and you know you're busy doing something over in, oh, I don't know, Legion, and then you get teleported back to Alduar because that's where the thing was programmed, and that bug really wasn't a bug. It was just how they had to make the code work back then in order to make it actually work with waypoints. But then we have all these things that get released where you'll see like patch releases where like there'll be some really innocuous things that have been updated. Like, oh, I don't know, this flower is now properly rendering. By the way, Alduar is completely broken again. Like it just because you build code on code on code and it's ancient, and there are so many weird interactions that you can't, it's hard to predict any of them. And with something as massively game-changing as we just went through, with all of the level squish, all of the item squish, all of the everything changing, yeah, I'm not surprised that there's some of these bugs. There's a reason why Shadowlands got delayed, because this is the type of stuff that it's virtually impossible to test for until you have a large enough sample size. and sometimes that large enough sample size is called go live. So I'm not terribly surprised.
But speaking of that, since it's a good segue to the next thing we're going to talk about, right now the Diablo 3 PTR has been up and testing, and it was supposed to end last week. Didn't end last week because there's a problem with the Season 22 bonuses and so forth, but they don't know what's causing the problem, which is what happens when you're doing testing. You have to, that's one of the things you do. So they're continuing the testing. And one of the things they're doing is they're disabling the Season 22 theme to see if that's what's causing the latency and lag issues. That's what the problem is. The game is, the PTR is having very much higher than normal latency and lag. So they're continuing testing. They're turning off, they're disabling the theme to see if that fixes it. Because if that fixes it, that's the problem. Then they're going to disable the extra slot from Kanai's cube and see if that fixes it. If it does, well, then that's the problem. Then they'll probably have to disable them both at the same time to see if it's neither of those things by themselves, maybe it's both together. And if that doesn't work, now we got to start getting creative. And that this means that, among other things, it means that Season 22 will likely be delayed further.
Yeah.
It's not even fair to call it delayed because they haven't announced it at any point. So it's not a delay. But Season 21 had issues on the PTR and they didn't fix them in time. It went live with them. So I'm glad that they're trying their best to fix any issues they're having with Season 22 before they launch it. But it is exactly what we were just talking about how Diablo 3 is a game from 2012 at this point. It's an 8-year-old game. And you're putting in entirely new systems into an 8-year-old game. It's the exact same thing. It's the exact same problem. That, to me, is absolutely fascinating. And not entirely unexpected. So, trying to think of the right way to put it. I think it's pretty much what Joe said. You know, you set up a system to work, to do something, and then 3 years later you do something else entirely different, and suddenly it's interacting, and you didn't expect it to interact. You didn't think about it interacting.
Yeah, it's so. You see it all the time with other things, too. Like, there's a weird Windows 10 bug for people that have upgraded from a previous version of Windows, where occasionally certain things like your display settings just won't load because whatever reason, everything else will work just fine, but it just will not load. And the only way to get rid of it is a full format and restore, because it's a weird interaction and nobody can figure out how to fix it. It just happens sometimes. And with games as old, like in people think of Diablo 3 a lot of times as not being that old. Diablo 3 is a pretty long tooth game at this point. What year was it released?
2012.
Yeah. And we are in 2020. So it's an 8-year-old game at this point.
And they started development a solid 4 years before that.
Yeah.
Like, so, and keep in mind that they restarted development after they had been developing a completely different Diablo 3. And then we're like, oh, that's not going to work. So they stopped doing that one and developed a different one. So this is like the game started, existence in 2008.
Yeah. I think like some credit is definitely due to the programmers and developers over there for keeping both WoW and Diablo 3 going as solidly as they have been, because whew, old code, man, it's a bear.
But yeah, I think this will probably be our last bit of news for the day because it's interesting, although it's kind of weird. You know how they've every so often you get a 6-month subscription reward of some kind?
Yeah.
I never get them because thanks to nice people, I've paid already till 2023.
You too?
Yeah. So I'm not going to ever get one of these promos when they do them. But this time they came out with one that I don't know if people know what to do with. You get a transmog piece this time, a transmog set, a look. It's called the Sprite Darter's Wings. It looks like a onesie with Sprite Darter wings on the back. And the wings are the shoulder slot. They're not the cape slot like people are thinking. It's an interesting look. I'm not going to say I'm upset that I won't get it because I'm really not. But I'm not, like, I don't think it's terrible either. I've seen some people who really don't like it. But yeah, that's the new, the current hotness for the year 6-month sub is the Sprite Darter's Wings uniform. It definitely looks better on some people than others. Like, I think it looks pretty cute on gnomes and goblins. Probably would look cute on a Volpera too, because, they're short and, they look like a Sprite Darter. But I don't know. I've seen it on a Blood Elf, and it did not work for me on a Blood Elf. So, have you got a chance to look at it yet, Joe?
I did. It is not something that I'm really kind of crazy about, but that's just me personally. Although this is something that I kind of, speaking of Diablo and coming back to this, I kind of hope they experiment more with wings, because I think it's a really cool transmog effect. I think Diablo has had some of the cooler wing effects over the years. I'd like to see some of those start creeping into WoW, especially since WoW essentially took the transmog system from Diablo, because it did. But like, I would love to see some more of it. I think it'll be great for some characters. If it's the shoulder slot, that means you can work it in a little bit differently. I think there'll probably be more opportunities to do it with some of the Shadowlands gear that drops, particularly with some of the Ardenweld stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of interested in it. So just not this particular one.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I'm in much the same case. So, alrighty though, we're gonna move on and talk about some of the things you guys want to talk about this month, and we're not doing any more podcasts after this. We're done. No, we're doing more. We come back. We're unstoppable. If you have a question for us here at Blizzard Watch, you can get it to us in a number of ways. You can email it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line "Podcast" or "Blizzard Watch," so we know it's for this show. Or sometimes people go for any show, for either show, and then it just depends on which one of us sees it first in terms of which show gets it, which is always great because, you know, nothing Joe and I like better than a nice cage match before we actually do the show. Or you can go to Discord, and we have the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel for patrons, which means if you're a patron, you get your first serve basically on questions for this podcast, for Lore Watch, and for the Q. Or you can go to the Q Questions channel, which is not patrons locked. So, you know, we still do look at it, and we still do take questions from it. It's just that we get patrons first. That's one of the things they get because they gave us money. That means we can keep doing the show.
Yes.
Joe's going to read the questions for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. Our first one is an email, but it does not have a name attached to it. So if this is yours, I apologize. Dearest Watchers, I was happy with all the customizations in pre-patch. However, Blizz seems to have been very unfair/sexist with the undead. The females have 4 different jaw/face options, and the male have tons of them. Options for no jaw and everything, but females do not have this option and very limited still. I only want my female undead to be as gruesome as possible, but Blizz doesn't seem to think women should look this way. Thoughts? We were talking a little bit about this on the pre-show where I don't know how to categorize it, but I will say that it does seem like some of the options for the female aligned certain races have less options or samey options. I was thinking about this when I was going through with my Nightborn in particular, because I wanted to make her different and make her look a little stranger, but I was looking through like the facial options and everything was very similar. And I'm not saying that there's not cool stuff there, but I could definitely appreciate the sentiment here where you have a specific way in your mind how you want your character to look, and that option isn't available to you. I will say that I hope that Blizzard will expand those options and give some more gruesome choices, particularly to the Forsaken, because I think that was one of always the coolest things. I still remember way back in the day, the Forsaken with the no jaw and the tongue dangling out from the skull, and I thought that was a really cool touch, and I thought that was nifty. And I think, you know, having a little bit of that horror element or a little bit of that non-pretty element to any of the races and any of the sexes or genders in the game is good. Like, more options will always be better.
Yeah, I feel like one of the problems I had, like I said, in the pre-show I mentioned I was looking at Forsaken because I do want to have some Horde characters. I want to start being able to play from the Horde side of the storyline. And one of the things I thought really strongly was that I had this discomfort when I was looking at Forsaken, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Like, why is this bugging me? What's going on? And I couldn't get it into my head, but this question immediately made me go, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think the Forsaken in particular, there's a missed opportunity there to amp up the disquieting body horror of the character. I mean, that's, if you think about what a Forsaken is, it's some essence of you, be your soul or spirit or whatever you want to think about, jammed into this horrific form, and it's worth, there should be more to it. It should be there. I thought it was really interesting. And I definitely feel like there's an opportunity here that we could have more that we're currently getting. It's not that what we've got is bad. And I definitely don't think the Forsaken are bad right now. I'm a little annoyed someone stink bombed me and while I was standing around talking, but that's what happens in World of Warcraft. It's Halloween. But no, I definitely think that I'd like to see more options. I'd like to see like four options versus, I don't know how many the male have off the top of my head, but I know that they do have more. So yeah, I'm on board with this. I agree with this statement is what I'm saying. I don't know if it's sexism or if it's just a lack of, like, I don't think that they set out, let's make female Forsaken look, you know, be boring. I just think that they didn't get as much stuff in as they might have wanted to.
And this is one of those things where this is a good opportunity for constructive feedback as well. And I don't mean, you know, yelling at them and saying, you know, do this or else you're this, to say, hey, it would be nice if we got more options. Look at how few we have, you know, in a constructive way, and say, you know, we'd like more body horror or stuff like that. That's the type of stuff that is good for that type of feedback. And I know the developers like that type of feedback when you give it to them in a constructive way and say, this is what we would like. And I think if they got more of that feedback, we'd probably see more of it. Because I think that's one of the things, like, you just have to make sure you give that feedback so that they know that's what people want. Because if nobody says anything, then nobody gets it. So, but hopefully in the future we will see more options. Our next question comes from our good friend Tetsemi. Question for Blizzard Watch Podcast. Did I just miss the announcement of World of Warcraft Grimoire of the Shadowlands and Beyond to be released on July 14th, 2021? This sounds like something along the lines of the book coming out this November exploring the Eastern Kingdoms. Are you looking forward to it, and what secret would you like to see revealed in it? And then there's some copy here that I'll read through. The afterlives await in this sprawling compendium, lovingly crafted by the World of Warcraft game team and the official Blizzard Entertainment historian, Sean Copeland. What lies beyond the veil of death? Journey past this mortal coil and discover the secrets of afterlives. Study the practices around death and dying on Azeroth, then follow a broker through the groves of Ardenweald, over the gleaming towers of Bastion, and into the depths of the Maw for a detailed voyage unlike any other, featuring gorgeous artwork never glimpsed by mortal eyes, a stunning fold-out map, and fresh secrets straight from the game team. Grimoire of the Shadowlands and Beyond is made to be treasured for eternity. In this authorial debut, Blizzard Entertainment historian Sean Copeland opens the vaults of both World of Warcraft and his years of hidden knowledge for all curious souls. I just read a whole lot, so go for it.
Okay. If you missed it, I missed it too. I'll be up front. I didn't know it was coming out. Sometimes we sound like we know everything, but no, I absolutely didn't see this coming. Didn't know it was a thing.
We're lucky we know what day of the week it is.
Yeah, that's true. The general question is, am I excited for it? Yes, I'm always excited for these things. I mean, I'm the guy that bought all the Chronicles.
Yep.
I don't know what's going to be in it because it's coming out relatively late. Like, by the time this comes out, we will have had Shadowlands for a while. I can't say
6-ish probably months. 7. Yeah.
So I don't know at what point it's, I don't know what it's written to reveal. I don't know if it's like, if we'll be getting 9.1 stuff in it, 9.2 stuff in it. I don't know. But yeah, I'm super excited. One of the things I'm dying to know is, are there other Shadowlands we're going to go to?
Yeah.
I've been thinking about that for a while. I mean, the past couple of expansions in particular, we've gotten like a big chunk of stuff at the end of them. At the end of Warlords, we got Tanan Jungle, which was a lot of content. It was a big zone. There was a lot going on in it. Legion went with 3 zones. Argus, to my mind, Argus was one of the best end of expansion content releases they've ever done. It took the kind of stuff they were doing with the Timeless Isle and Tanan Jungle, and it just went for broke with it. I'm still One of the things I'm doing right now in World of Warcraft is going to Argus to like kill rares and mess around. I am doing that. I have been doing that as of last night. I was doing it. So yeah, Argus is one of my favorites. It's one of the things I'm super curious about is like, I think that Battle for Azeroth, it wasn't bad, but they did what, first off, they did it kind of in the middle of the expansion with Nas Jhatar and Mechagon. And Nas Jhatar and Mechagon didn't connect in any way. And they were different kinds of experiences. Nas Jhatar definitely felt like it was part of the main story. It was part of the whole, you know, there's a raid involved. You know, we were going there. And it ultimately culminated in the release of N'Zoth, which was like the whole thing from the beginning. But Mechagon, as much as I think it was really well designed, did not resonate with me. I don't know how Joe felt about it, but I felt like once I'd done it enough, I've done this enough.
Yeah.
Like I don't feel the need to come back. I don't feel the need to, like, I only grounded as high as I did because I wanted flying. So then when we actually got into like the final patch, they revamped a couple of zones for like the old god invasions. And those were fine. I don't have any problem with them. To this day, I don't have a problem with them, but I didn't really like them either. I honestly felt a little bit like, okay, this could have been really good if there was more stuff like in each zone. And I don't mean more stuff like more encounters, just more story that kind of told the story more effectively. There was a lot of story. That the quest is enormous. So I don't know how they're going to do this in Shadowlands or what they're going to do. And I'm really curious as to how it's going to go. Is it going to be more like Argus, where you go to, like, say, some other Shadowland that we've never heard of? Is it going to be going to Thros? I mean, because we know Thros is involved in the Ardenweald stuff, so maybe like patch 9.2.
We might have to dive back into their thing, yeah.
Yeah, maybe 9.2 we go there. I know the Maw is a big endgame thing that's going to continue for the entire expansion.
We can't go elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff I'm really curious about.
Yeah, I am very excited for this for a couple reasons. One, the date of it, I think, is really specific, and I think it's really specific in a good way. The fact that it's not planned until the middle of July means that we will have had a good amount of time from the Shadowlands dropping to the release of this book, and it's going to give us a whole lot more information about Shadowlands. And I think that's really cool, and the timing is going to be at such a point where a lot of the stuff will either be already announced or the groundwork will already be laid. One of the things we talk about a lot on Lore Watch is progressive storytelling and how that sort of changed since, I want to say, Warlords of Draenor, like maybe Mists of Pandaria. They started getting into this flow of progressive storytelling more and more and more, where the events of an expansion continually move forward, maybe calling on some older things to tie up loose ends or other quests that we might have forgotten about for years come back to sort of bite us in the behind or have relevance again. And I don't think Battle for Azeroth is any different, and I don't think Shadowlands is going to be any different, because it's only been getting better. Like, we talk about Legion and Argus. Argus is an old-school thing. Like, that's something we've known about, at least as a living thing, since Burning Crusade, essentially.
Before that, the Argus Wake.
Yep.
Where, if you're playing either Horde or Alliance, you had to confront the Argus Wake as you leveled up. So yeah, it is interesting to see. Like, I think that you're right to peg that to Mists, because I really think it was the original the Horde and Alliance invasion campaigns in Pandaria.
Yeah,
that really started that trend, and we saw a lot of stuff that, you know, to this day was resonating. Like Jaina's final break, where she's like, no more neutrality, was from Mists of Pandaria. It was from that campaign, because the Horde snuck the Divine Bell through Dalaran, and that set her off, because it was like, no, we're supposed to be neutral, and this is being done behind my back in my city. And that caused, you know, her purge of the I can't remember the name of the Blood Elves there. Stormweavers? I whatever they were called. Sun something? They were purged at Dalaran. They didn't get to come back to Legion. There's a whole thing about it. It affected the story to this day. Like, in Battle for Azeroth, we were still seeing side effects of it. In fact, when you go to break Bane out, it turns out that one of the the Blood Elves who's working for Sylvanas is doing it to get revenge on Jaina for the Purge.
Not the Scryers. That's Burning Crusade. That's one of the factions there.
That's Burning Crusade. It's Sunreavers?
Sunreavers.
Yeah. And that kind of progressive storytelling from expansion to expansion, from patch to patch, it's very present in Battle for Azeroth because you just see one piece of it right there.
But
it's all over the place. So I'm very interested to see how they do it in Shadowlands, and I'm hoping the book will give us some idea of it.
And that's why I think the book is being delayed as much, because with the hype about it, like, you would expect that something like that would be pushed pretty early, like we have with the art book revealing some lore secrets here and there. If it's got that type of stuff in there, if Copeland is putting some really juicy tidbits in there, that means that by then, hopefully, we'll be in a position where it's... I don't want to say it's not a spoiler territory, but it's in a way that it makes more sense, because one of the things we talk about a lot too is we don't generally understand everything that's going on in the Shadowlands. We don't really have a good grasp on it yet. By then, in theory, we should. And that excites me, because what are they going to tell us? What has to be delayed that much? What interesting and cool lore bombs are they going to drop on us, or secrets will they reveal at that time? So, but I think that's all I have to say about that. Do you have anything else to add?
Also, you know, we've already gotten some fairly deep, interesting lore stuff from the art book that comes with the collector's edition of Battle for Azeroth, for Shadowlands. That was pretty cool. I am interested to see what they break out for this. And one of the things I'm really interested in seeing is maps, because maps reveal a lot.
Oh yeah.
When you get a chance to really sit down and look at them, especially if they're higher quality than just the maps in the game. One of the things about Cataclysm, about Chronicle, I loved was the maps. Like, for one thing, you get a chance to actually get a sense of the scale of things. So I'm really interested in that.
I agree.
But that's basically it for me. That's all I have to say on this subject.
All right. Our next question comes from Colin. I don't know how to pronounce your name, and I apologize. Thank you to the stalwart watchers of weather. This is Salmis. Oh, okay. Well, we have multiple names. I apologize. The Alchemical Rogue here with a question for the Blizzard Watch podcast. Have we received a statement from the developers about the intended purpose of the Relic of the Past system for adjusting the power level of crafted items? It's difficult to assess how it is working if we don't know what it is for. I don't think they really have said a whole lot about it. I don't think so. Have you gotten anything or seen anything?
I remember, like, I've seen
posts about it. Because it's a crafting thing.
Yeah, I remember seeing posts about it on Reddit about how it's supposedly been fixed. And, you know, I don't know. This was like 2 months ago, the Reddit post I read, was that it was basically... I don't think there's been any real big statement about it other than it supposedly is working as intended now, but I don't really know exactly how it's intended to work. Relics of the Past 5, for instance, has a flat 10-second cast time. There's stuff like that. The item you use it on can also be mass crafted. You click add relic, you use the relic on it, and that boosts the item. I'm not sure, like, you know, I don't really know what we're doing here in terms of it, quite frankly. I have a problem with a lot of crafting in Shadowlands that I feel somewhat confused by a lot of it, because I don't recall seeing anything specific about how it's supposed to work. It's other than make the item better. Like, it's a different version of the thing that we had in Legion, where you could make an item and then you'd make a better version of the item and you'd learn more and you'd make a better version of the item. How it's going to actually end up working, I don't think we've had any statement. If there has been, I have missed it, and then I apologize for that.
It's hard to keep track of everything, and it's one of those things where, like, again, I don't really think they've talked too much about it. I don't think there's been like an official post. I don't think there's been an official conversation about it yet. And I don't know what it really means. I know that there are multiple levels of it. There are different professions that can do it. But that's it. So I think it's, this has to do with like the different crafting of like old gear in different colors or something along those lines, I think, right? Like it's, because I see some of the patterns involve like fell iron ore and some of them Shaw Touch leather. So this is like some of the older gear and bringing back some stuff that might not be available in game, I think. But again, don't know yet. So I know nothing about it. I don't think they've said anything about it. I don't think they've, I want them to go into more detail about it, because if there's ways to get, use this to get gear that no longer exists, or different colorations of said gear, yes, please. So, but yeah, if we hear anything about it, we can let you know.
Yeah, absolutely. We're paying attention. It's just a question of, I don't know what it's for. It's a good question. Your point about it's difficult to assess how it's working when you don't even know what it's supposed to be doing. That's absolutely true. I remember like the Relics of the Past one worked from item level 23, you know, for level 15s. And then you had the Relic of the Past 2, item level 33, Relic of the Past 3, item level 43. And then levels, you know, 4 went up to item level 56, and items 5 went up to item level 87. And now they much smaller item level. So I think item level 54 for a level 47 character for Relics of the Past 5. I think that's what it's used on. I don't know what it adds to the item. So, yeah, I'm as confused as you are about Relics of the Past. Quite frankly, with soul binds and conduits and, you know, picking a covenant, and it just, I wasn't really focusing a lot of my attention on Relics of the Past. So I am not sure what they're doing with that. That is the only real response I have to that, unfortunately.
All right, let's move on to our next one. Hello, boys. So the lore of Warcraft, this expansion, seems to be shaping up to be something like way back after Arthas was defeated. Wow, can't talk today. Sylvanas shows up late to the party, and in a moment of depression and without a sense of purpose, tosses herself from the top of the Ice Crown. She then finds herself confronted with a jailer who makes some kind of yet-to-be-fully-described deal. A pact is formed between the jailer and Sylvanas, along with some Valkyr, to return Sylvanas back to the world of the living. Over the next few years, Sylvanas is quietly working on the jailer's goals, while we battle dragons, pandas, Doc Browns, DeLorean, invading demon armies, and Jaina's mom. I honestly have no problem with any of this, including the very minor retcon of what happened during Edge of Night. I love long story setups and really appreciate people who can creatively fit a good new story into past events. But here's the hiccup. We discover in Revendreth that Garrosh is there being purged of his sins, leading the community to guess that perhaps nobody ever goes directly to the Maw, that instead everybody is given a second chance first. And whether the second chance theory holds true still begs the question. Before the events of Edge of Night, what had Sylvanas done that in any way was worse than what Garrosh did? I mean, many atrocities and all since, but before? Most likely I'm just overthinking a good story and should just sit back and enjoy the show, but I'm still interested in what you think. Thanks. Swarbo from Proudmoore, U.S.
I mean, she was using the plague to engineer a death weapon to kill all life, and she was testing it on people that she was kidnapping and having caged up in Undercity, like gnomes and humans and so forth. That's a war crime. She was, you know, consorting with demons. But also, I think you're making an assumption here that she would have to be. She was killed with Frostmourne and then had the Lich King, who wasn't even the Lich King yet, Arthas was not the Lich King when he did it, drag her back, her spirit back, and jam it into her body. In fact, he didn't even jam it into her body. He turned her into a banshee. And then later on, she regained her body. It's quite possible that from the moment that that happened to her, she was marked. Since we know that the Lich King was using the power of the Maw, when Uther's memory is seen, it's immediately responded, you know, that the runes on that blade are, you know, that's the power of the Maw. And that blade is, you know, what's the old thing? Your power must scar the spirit. It's quite possible that it's not that she was worse than Garrosh, but that she died on the, you know, Frostmourne. She died to somebody who would later wield the Helm of Domination using the power of Frostmourne to do it. And he used the power of Frostmourne to trap her in Unlife. So when she threw herself off of Ice Crown Citadel, keep in mind that the jailer was already looking for a way to get the Helm of Domination back. He may have taken the opportunity to use the power that was animating her, that was his power, since it's from the Maw, so that he could grab hold of her and offer her a deal. Assuming that he actually actively offered her a deal, because in Edge of Night, you know, you see the deal comes from the Valkyr. It's quite possible the Valkyr didn't tell her everything up front.
This is also one of those things I really like to point out, because this is not the first time I've heard somebody, you know, why did you go to the Maw? Why did you go to the Maw? Why did you go to the Maw when Garrosh is here and all this stuff, and nobody ever really goes to the Maw. Her going to this dark, voided type place is not mutually exclusive to everybody going somewhere before they go to the Maw. In fact, you have to keep in mind that who ferries the souls of the dead from Azeroth to the Shadowlands to be judged and then take them to where they're supposed to go? Kyrian. Who was there for Sylvanas when she was in that void state that dragged her out of it, that dragged her out of that eternal darkness? Those dark Valkyr. What are the Valkyr modeled after? Kyrian. What can the Valkyr do? Fairy souls. We've seen them do this in the past. There's an entire character generation storyline revolving around it. When you look at the Forsaken, who brings those souls into those bodies? It is not a necromancer. It is not a scourge. It is a Valkyr. It is also entirely possible that the Valkyr, who have been acting on orders the entire time from the jailer, biding time to whatever the you know, goal was or whatever the plan was, seized the opportunity to take her soul when she flung herself off of Ice Crown and shove her into a dark hole and show her nothing but despair and get her to a point where she would accept any bargain put in front of her to give her purpose and to get her out of that place when maybe she truly believed that that's where she was going to go. Maybe that's what she was told at first that got her on board with this to begin with. Because again, as Matt pointed out, it's the Valkyr that bring her back. The Valkyr who have been working for Helya and the jailer the entire time. And they've been there the entire time. And they were at Ice Crown when she flung herself off the top of it. That is the most Occam's razor answer I can give to anybody who wants to know why she went to that place. It is entirely possible that it was an opportunistic setup and put her in the right frame of mind, in the right place, at the very wrong time, with agents that were not working for the actual Lich King, even though he thought they were. That's my two cents on that. It is the easiest answer to explain that, in my opinion.
It doesn't matter, like, to basically break it down again, it doesn't matter whether or not she's a worse person than Garrosh. And just going by what she'd done up to that point, it doesn't matter. Because, I mean, for that matter, Garrosh hadn't done all that stuff yet either, but whatever. It's quite possible that she was brought in because they were looking for a tool. You know, somebody that would be able to do, somebody that could actually beat Bolvar and take the hat.
Yeah, if it had been Bolvar that flung himself from the top, it could have very easily been him that got shoved in that hole, if, you know, in that dark place. We don't know, right? And I think Matt made a really good point. Sorry, I don't mean to jump in and interrupt, but like, you made a really good point. We don't know that that was the deal that was offered to her. I still think that maybe she didn't understand the full scope of what she was being asked to do until she met with Helya. Like, we still don't know the content of that conversation.
We don't even know how she found out about Helya. Like, did one of the Valkyr say, by the way, you should probably talk to this person because she made us? Like, you know, keep in mind, too, that a lot of Sylvanas' behavior, people forget this, but in the beginning of Cataclysm, in the Silverpine Forest Horde Zone, Sylvanas dies.
Yeah, she's straight up murdered.
Yeah, she gets killed, and the Valkyr sacrifice themselves to bring her back. But is that when she had her first real chat with the jailer? We don't know, but it's quite possible, because she doesn't seem to know anything about Helya before that moment. And it's after that, after Cataclysm's over, that she suddenly knows that Helya's up in Stormheim and that she wants to talk to her. Because the entire Stormheim campaign, from the Horde perspective, it's like, where'd Sylvanas go? We just made her war chief and she's just vanished. And when you find her, she is not communicative as to what she's doing. Like, if you're a Horde player, she straight up keeps you in the dark.
Yeah, oh,
she does not tell you what she's doing. She doesn't explain any of it to you.
And all of it is like vaguely, oh, I'm trying to save our people. Right. Like there's no specifics. It's all this generic nebulous, no detail plan of we're trying to make sure we can survive till tomorrow. But what about this giant radioactive plague bear? Don't mind that. We're just working for saving our race for tomorrow. Like that's the type of thing that happened. Right. Like it was complete bonkers. She never told anybody anything. Like, I don't even think Nathanos knows the full scope of everything that's been going on.
He's straight up like, you know, I don't know where she is. Go find her.
He's an arrow in the quiver. Just like everybody else to her.
And so it is interesting to consider, like, in the timeline of what we knew and what we saw, there's no reason to believe she actually knew what was going on at first any more than anybody else. It's just that there's lots of stuff that happened to her afterwards that we're not really privy to. We know it happened. We saw it happen, but we only saw it. It's like playing telephone, or worse, somebody else is on the phone and they don't want you to hear what they're saying. So she's like, when we show up in Helheim, she's talking to Helya. We don't hear any of it. We just see them talking. And then she like turns to you and says, yeah, go do something.
Oh yeah. We're there at the tail end. And there's Valkyr around her too. Like there's none of other Helya's other minions. It's Valkyr, her, and Helya. And then we just interrupt it. So keep that in mind and take that with sort of a grain of salt that like, I'm not going to even call it a retcon because it's not changing the events that happened. The event still happened. We're just getting more context to it. And this goes back to what we're talking about that book, like the guide. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get more context to things as time goes on. And this could have been planned from back then. We don't know. I know for a fact that certain people had storyboards and ideas for quests and long-term story for years and years and years of game. I mean, you can talk to Metzen about that and look at some of his interviews. And I, at one point, I think it was 2008, I had the luxury of actually speaking with him at BlizzCon, where like they treated it like an extended D&D campaign, where like they would come up with story hooks and plot ideas and see what stuck. But they had stuff like they had grand ideas where they wanted everything to go. Sometimes that changes. But this could be something that was a nugget from back then that, like, this moment is going to lead to something more epic down the line. We just maybe don't necessarily know what it fully looks like yet. And now we're starting to get to that point. A lot of the things we talk about aren't exactly these fixed moments of time. We're getting them from unreliable narrator sources. We're getting them from an observer's eagle, like 1,000-yard stare view of it, or whatever you want to call it, like an eagle eye view of it. We don't have like this microscopic view of everything that's going on. And I keep going back to that Helya conversation. When we show up, we see them in the distance, and that is the perfect analogy for it. We're on the outside looking in, even as player characters. So even when we quote unquote know what's going on, we don't necessarily know everything that's going on because we are not omniscient. So I think it's kind of cool that they can go back and look at these, and maybe this was planned, maybe it wasn't, but it's not a retcon. It's just adding more flavor to the pasta as far as I'm concerned. Sorry, anything else to add on that one?
No, I think we're pretty good.
All right. Our last question. Frozen Ones, I, Salt Marsha, ask you for this. What is the post-Shadowlands Azeroth going to look like? Is Anduin going to be the old Anduin from the Legion comic Son of the Wolf? Will Jaina and Thrall get married? Is Bane going to go Death Knight? I talked a whole lot, so I'm going to let you have a moment.
I can kind of get where some of this is coming from, because it's like, if you did the Maw intro, you know that those are the four characters. I'm not sure where Jaina and Thrall getting married comes from. Thrall is married. He has a wife and like two kids at this point. I've seen no sign that he is unhappy in this relationship. I mean, quite frankly, she could probably do better. But I mean Thrall's wife, by the way. I mean, Agra could do better than Thrall. He kind of isn't that great as a husband. But nevertheless, I've seen no sign that Jaina is thinking along those terms. As for Bane becoming Death Knight, again, if you did the Maw, you do see bad stuff happens to Bane, and he gets kind of possessed by evil ghosts, but you kind of deal with that. At the end of the Maw, you basically leave them there. Like, you activate a gate, and you are sent to Ouroboros.
Because you can leave.
Yeah. They are not as fortunate. We know that Tyrande seems to be able to get out.
Which is interesting. But, well, she goes in by herself, doesn't she? She's not kidnapped. She's able to go there.
She goes in when you go in. She jumps in ahead of you. And I don't know if that's currently the case. I haven't done them on a little bit. But the way it was when I ran it was that she went running in ahead of you. And because of the way time works there and that it doesn't, you have no idea how long she was there before you got there. She seems to be able to get to other parts of the Shadowlands. That might be, however, the fact that she is tapping into enormous power. The Night Warrior, if you get to see the little cinematic where various people are kidnapped by Sylvanas' forces, Tyrande dismisses those things with contemptuous ease.
Oh, yeah. He bats them down.
Yeah, like, you know, if you think you're taking me anywhere, boom. I think if Sylvanas had actually showed up, this expansion would already be over.
Yeah, I'm on that train, too.
Yeah, Tyrande would have just annihilated her. The power that Tyrande is channeling is powerful enough to kill an old god by itself. Like, the Night Warrior on another planet was used to defeat an old god.
Yeah, like, Nyalotha wouldn't have been a thing if Tyrande had not been busy dealing with the fallout or hunting Sylvanas. Just throwing that out there.
If she'd cared, like, she didn't listen, like, she wasn't paying attention to Anduin's summons at that point. Like, when he sent her a letter saying, bad stuff's happening, she's like, I don't care. You didn't help my people. You deal with your own problems. She's the power she's channeling is extreme. And I think it's only getting more powerful as time goes on, which is why it's also getting, like, the signs are all there that's going to rip her into little pieces if she doesn't find a way to share it with other people. But this is all kind of spoilery for Ardenweald, so I'll leave it at that. But yeah, they don't seem to be able to leave the Maw. I don't know what that means for the future after Shadowlands. I don't know if they're not coming back or if not all of them are coming back. A lot of people have talked about the idea that Anduin will get old in the Shadowlands. I don't know if that will happen because I don't know if time itself doesn't really seem to exist in the Shadowlands. Like, you could be there for like what felt like 1,000 years and for all I know, nothing would happen to you. You know, you won't get older because there's no time there as such. So I got no idea. A lot of people want it to happen, it feels like, because it keeps getting brought up. But I don't know if it will happen. I don't know if it's really going to be involved at all.
We have no idea. And we don't like saying that very often, but it's something you're going to hear a lot of.
Yeah, especially in this case, because this is like you're asking us to predict what's going to happen after Shadowlands.
In 2 years, basically.
Yeah, I don't even know what's happening during Shadowlands yet, man. Like,
but we can. Go ahead.
No, I think you're about to say we can make guesses.
Yeah, and that's all we can do. We can make guesses. We can make educated leaps of logic. And that's what we can do. I think that there might be something there with the Anduin thing, but I don't necessarily believe it's going to be an aging thing. I've been thinking about this a lot more, and I've been thinking about a lot of how the Maw churns souls, what it does to them. And this is something we've been talking about on Lore Watch a lot, which is when you go there, you see a lot of like amalgamations of shards of souls. You don't see complete like beings of anima. It is a rarity to see a complete creature rolling around there. And when you do, you question it immediately because it is nothing like you've seen. Even the agents of the jailer in the Maw are broken, incomplete masses of anima and soul spliced together, much like Blizzard's code for over the last 16 years, where you don't know how this is working, but yet it somehow is. But I think we're going to see something happen, not necessarily with time, but characters can age in a different way. We talk about Bane and what happens with him and the series of traumatic events and the weight that that will cause him to carry. And we've all lived through these moments in our life. Everybody has these moments where something hits you in such a way, in such a profound way, that it physically alters you. It alters maybe how you stand or sit or talk, how you know, the inflection on certain words, because your brain rewires to deal with things that happen, and as a result, things change. One of the things that is, it's a trope of fantasy novels, it's a trope of sci-fi novels, is that extreme trauma can cause physical alteration. And what Anduin's going through is not exactly a picnic. He's essentially Wesley in the Pit of Despair, and he's hooked up to the torture machine with the suction cups and all those wonderful, wonderful sluice gates. And as he's going through that, those pits of despair and getting left behind, because again, like Matt said earlier, we get to leave the Maw. They don't. They're trapped there. We don't know what happens in between. And then we look at things like Torghast, and we see what happens with the Rune Carver and how gnarled and broken he is, and some of the other souls that we come across as we go through Torghast. There's a lot of weird metaphysical stuff going on here. It doesn't have to be time. The Anduin that comes out after this is not going to be the Boy King anymore. We even started seeing that during Battle for Azeroth. He's not the straight optimistic, hopeful youth that he was at the end, even at the end of Legion, after all that terribleness. He still had sort of like this, oh, you know, things will be okay, we can make it through this. He's starting to get sort of that weight of life. And what do you think is going to happen in the Maw where time doesn't exist? And he's just being tortured for who knows how long and being forced to deal with the reality of all these broken souls. And that's the other thing. He's sensitive. He's not exactly walled off from emotion or effect of energy around him. And we've seen this in books and the comics and some of his interactions ever since the Shattering, when he was being trained in the ways of priesthood by the dwarves. Like, he's attuned to the light. He feels emotion in a very specific way. He keys off of it. Hence his like slightly flicking into shadow occasionally. What do you think is going to happen to somebody who's that sensitive in the Maw being tortured with all of those broken souls? I would not be surprised if he comes out of there haggard and worn down and needs to have recovery and has this like not older, but just like being sort of wasted away from the inside out of having to endure all of that. He's not going to be as happy-go-lucky. If anything, I would not be terribly surprised if he's more like his dad was before his dad was balanced. He's going to feel that weight. So I think that's where it's going to come from, and I think there will be effects for it. But I don't think it's just going to be the old man. Years have passed and, you know, he's sitting on the bridge of a ship. But yeah, there's going to be some weird implications. And I think Anduin's going to be one of the most changed, especially when you consider all the stuff happening with Tyrande. He still considers Tyrande a friend at many points, and like everything that's happening with her weighs on him. And then we don't know what's going to happen with her story in Shadowlands. And that's going to weigh on him too, because it's going to come back to, oh, I didn't help her. She made a choice that I could have helped her stay away from. That choice led her down this path. And if I had just done this one thing, because this is exactly the type of person Anduin is, if I had done this one thing, I could have prevented all this tragedy, and I didn't do it because I was so focused on this. And he's going to beat himself up, and he's going to be grizzled, and he's going to be slightly more hardened. He's going to have different differences of as far as how he interacts with people. He probably will have more in common with Gen Greymane than anybody else, having lived through such traumatic experiences. Sorry, yeah, that was a whole lot.
One of the things I wanted to point out before we move on, though, is if you do them all, one of the things that happens is only one of the characters is still in decent shape when you meet them. Anduin is confined. He's chained up.
Yep.
Bane, like I said, he has evil stuff jammed into him. Thrall is just getting his butt kicked. Like, Thrall is just on the ground bleeding when you find him. And Jaina is the only one who is still fighting. And she even says, like, I've been escaping and getting recaptured and escaping for months. From her perspective, it's been months of her doing this. She's the only one who hasn't been, like, I almost feel like saying Jaina is the only one who's been through so much in her regular day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah.
That going into the Maw doesn't phase her. Like, yeah, okay, we're in, like, some kind of horrible death dimension. Yeah, that happens. I'm going to keep trying to break out now. You know, I'm the most powerful mage you're ever going to meet, and I'm going to keep trying to get out. And I think that Anduin, I think that we saw a little bit in Shadows Rising that Anduin is already kind of on edge before this even happens.
Oh, yeah, even when he's in the bar, like, when he's in the tavern, like, there's that sort of wariness that we wouldn't normally see in him, right?
Yeah, so I definitely think that this is a case of a character who is poised for some kind of change. I definitely think Joe is right about that. I don't know what it'll be, but I definitely think that he will be different. Although I do like the idea of him not being like, you know, just being grumpy all of a sudden. Like, he comes back, he still looks like Anduin. So I think that would make sense, but yeah. We'll see what happens.
I think we have something related just quickly from chat that sort of comes in. This is from Wolf Parable. Do you guys think if more will come with the comparisons they did between him and Arthas and Before the Storm? I think that that's going to be something we're going to see brought up a lot, simply because I think that's one of the most common ways to try to break Anduin down. If that makes sense, because there's
actually, I'm going to interrupt you here because you had to go a long time for there. I honestly am not 100% convinced we're not going to see Arthas.
Oh, yeah, no, agreed.
And if we do, it might actually be Arthas himself.
Not the Lich King.
Who makes that comparison. Like, it might be Arthas who says to Anduin, I was, you know, young king, I was once like you. And because, for one thing, if you remember the original trailer for Wrath of the Lich King, when it was before it was out, there was that young heroes, I was once like you bit that pretty much to me sums up Arthas in a nutshell. Arthas is always trying to convince people that what he did was right. Mm-hmm. It was the one thing to do. And my God, would Anduin be a tempting target on that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially if the two of you are stuck in the Maw together, you're like, yeah, see what. What happened to you? Here you are. You're in the same place I am. You know, you tried to live your life, you know, and so did I. You think I tried to be a paladin. I tried to live my life according to all that. And here I am. And here you are. It's like we pay for like these, we pay for our choices, even though we thought we were doing the right thing. We thought we were helping people, you know, and that's to me, I definitely think that might happen. But I think it will actually be a more direct comparison. It won't just be like Garrosh saying, and that's the thing is when that comparison was originally made, it was Garrosh not comparing Anduin to Arthas as Anduin thought he was. Garrosh was comparing himself to Arthas.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad comparison. They're both, you know, fairly young. I mean, Garrosh was older than Thrall, but people who were put into positions they didn't know what to do with.
Unprepared.
Just did their best with it. And that's Anduin to a T. Anduin and Garrosh have a lot in common. I think it's one of the reasons why you get the Anduin-Garrosh conversations in War Crimes. Garrosh recognized that there's, you know, for all that he doesn't like humans, there's a lot of comparison between himself and Anduin. And I definitely think there's a lot of comparison between Anduin and Arthas that will come up. But I think it might actually be Arthas who's the one making the point.
I agreed. But I think that's all we have time for, unless there's anything else you want to add.
No, I think we're good.
All right, well, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcasts or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And did you know that our podcast is available now on Spotify? I was waiting for it, but he didn't do it this time. But you can actually go listen to all of our podcasts now on Spotify as well. You can support us there. Listens there do matter. But if you want to stream us instead of download us, feel free. But yeah. And thank you to everybody who continues to support us. Matt?
Thank you, Joe. Again, guys, if you want to like leave a question for the show, you can either go to our Discord, the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel, or the Q Questions channel. Both of them we look at for questions for the show. Or you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com, the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. I am sorry that I didn't feign over-exaggerated surprise that we're at Spotify, as I did on Lore Watch this week. I failed you. I failed the city. The Queen will be upset with me. But this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.